Extraction number 12661, Mr. Jim Ray, reel 11.
Mr. Ray, reel 11. Now, just before we go on, perhaps you've just told me off the tape a little bit about the train and the people on it and what it was like.
Yeah. I think I mentioned the train itself was made in Glasgow.
Not on tape, you didn't know, yeah.
Yes, it was, because when it stood for any length of time, I used to have a walk along, and that's when I introduced myself to the little chap, little boy. Used to sit on the front of the engine, called him Tulsi Ram. So I said, "What's your name, boy?" "Chico." "Tulsi Ram, Saab." "Tulsi Ram." "Yes, Saab." "What do you do?" And he went through the motions. I sit here and he had a little platform above the right-hand buffer. And he used to be there on, right on the front. And he used to get his hands in a big box on the left side, scoop sand in his hands, and he used to let it trickle on the right side rail, especially coming to a gradient, that give grip, you know, to the steel rims of the train wheels, and used to help it up the incline because they're quite steep. And there they were. And the little engine just go chuntering away up there, you know. There was two men, one was a stoker, but he couldn't get in the cab because the cab was too small anyway.
This is a narrow gauge, right?
Narrow gauge, yes. And the driver used to, well, it was quite easy for him because he had a good view all around, the same as what we could, you know. And he used to open the little door in the... The man on the back on the tender, a little small tender, used to pass lumps of wood in, billets of wood for the power of steam. It was quite interesting that way. And when I actually got up to Libong, nearing
you,
it...
I thought you marched down to Libong from Dajin.
Yes, but I thought when I was there, it was a garden on top of the world. The scenery... The flowers were so exotic in that rarefied air. And the air was thin, you know, it lacks oxygen. Different colours, delicate, some large. And it all used to blend in with the green and the blue of the sky. And I always carried that in my mind. I'd never seen anything so pretty, so high up above the earth, anyway. And We eventually marched down to Libong, I think. Did I mention that before?
No, what was the march?
Yes, we got down to... Darjeeling, disembarked there, and we had a short march down to Libong.
About how far was it?
Oh, it was only about 2.5 miles, yes. And that was situated, it was like a small plateau in the hillside. And the barracks were brick-built, more or less modern to what the barracks were, like in Barrackpore. And the more recently built, I should think, in the early or middle of the 19th century, you know. There was a big gymnasium, and Libong, it has the smallest racecourse in the world. It has its tote, it's got the stands, and from where we were, in Libong, we could see Darjeeling quite clearly on the hillside, and the governor's house was at Darjeeling. And there's one incident happened there while I was there during the racing season, and the old Mongolian ponies, the racehorses, and the jockeys have colours just the same as in the tote and that of a starting and finishing post. And while one of these races was in progress, the governor was there. And if it hadn't been for one of our colour sergeant Love, he'd have been assassinated because there's an assassin there. And he was nearby when the assassin pulled the gun, pistol, to take a shot at the governor's back. And he wrestled with the assassin and disarmed him and got him arrested and put away.
Did you see that or just hear about it?
I could see the commotion in the crowd because our barracks were just used to sit on the bank side and the race course was there, you know. You could throw a stone on the race course because the railings run right close to the barracks. And I think it was about three times round for a mile anyway, because we used to do our proficiency test on there. You had to run a mile three times round in 6 minutes. That was one of our proficiency tests. But when we settled into Libong, the first week we did nothing at all. Not a thing. The reason why is because the air was so rarefied, and if you did any exertion, you used to turn dizzy because your blood hadn't absorbed, hadn't got adjusted to the atmosphere. And of course the pressure's lighter up there, you see. Yeah.
So what did you do after that week? Just normal routine?
Normal routine. We carried on just as normal.
So the reason for moving was the heat on the
heat,
plains?
Yes. It was like a holiday camp for us, really. We played sport. Our normal duties, we went for a bugle practice as usual. Instead, we used to go for a little march down what they call the Lower Circular Road. And that road, it led down to the Teesta Valley, and the bridge across the Teesta Valley, that was the borders to Bhutan. That was the kingdom of Bhutan.
You mentioned there's two things. The proficiency tests, what were they then? I mean, one of them obviously was running the mile in 6 minutes. What were the others?
Long jump, high jump.
How far would you have to get with them?
As far as you can get off the springboard.
Was there a set amount you had to achieve on all these things?
Well, as near as possible, you know. You got the benefit of the doubt anyway for a start. They had a set distance.
But if you failed, you just get a bit of a warning.
No, it was all right. You knew you tried your best. You're all right. Under the circumstances, you could run better on the plains than you could in Libong because the air. You know, the intake of the air. Your heart used to go like a hammer.
So what other proficiencies? You've got jumping, too high and
really high jump, a long jump, putting the shot, a mile in 6 minutes.
What about shooting? I mean, was that part of it?
Well, we didn't do much shooting at all, no. But there was no rifle range as up there.
Why did you do the proficiency tests at Libong and not down on the plains?
Well, we did that on the plains, but I didn't mention it. We did it to see for physical fitness.
So this was a regular just test on you?
Yes.
What was your health like while you were in India? Because there's a few things you can get, dysentery, various fevers.
No, I had malaria. I had malaria to Barakpur. I had a very... I had malaria in Barakpur, yes. I was in Barakpur about fortnight or more.
How badly did you get it?
Well, He was diagnosed as BT fresh. It's been the first time you've had malaria in your life. And I lost weight. I couldn't eat. And I had the shivers. As a matter of fact, I was on parade and I fainted. And they took me over.
How long had you been out there when that happened, about?
About 3 or 4 months.
Quite early on?
Yes. And then when I came out, I was excused all duties for 28 days. And what I had to do, start eating as much as I could. I was, 21 years of age, I was 13 stone in weight. And I had my birthday in Le Bon, up in the hills.
Hang on, before we leave malaria, did you recover? I mean,
slowly.
And did it recur?
You have the recur, is what they call relapsing. Well, the next time I had it was in. I can come to it. We will eventually. Calaba, when we were going on the way to Sudan, we spent some time at Calaba barracks.
Okay. I'll save that then. What about malaria precautions? You mentioned the mosquito nets. Was there anything else you had to try and do to stop malaria?
Well, you had quinine tablets, you know. Sometimes it was raw. You took a dose a day. But where I was concerned, it wasn't very effective.
What about other health problems? Any dysentery or any of the others?
Apart from malaria, I was all right. There's no dysentery because everything was prophylactic. You know, it was clean, everything. And the latrines were emptied each day and dumped, you know.
Would that be done by...
Native labour. Native labour used to do that, yes. Used to clean all that away for us.
What about mental health? I mean, you are obviously enjoying yourself from the sounds of it most of the time. What about some of the older sweats? Was there any trouble with people having a bit of trouble with the boredom or the heat?
Well...
There was a phrase, doolally tap, and things like that. Were there any people?
Well, there's one chap, he went strange, and called him Hudson. He didn't belong to my company at all. He belonged to some other company. But he used to go a bit balmy now and again, and used to have to get him, put him in the clink. He had a habit of attacking whoever it was for no apparent reason. And I knew there was something mentally wrong then. And eventually, they let him out for exercise, went under guard, and he ran away. He went all the way to the village, in a big pond, in the village, a big deep pond, a water pond. He dived in there, and he never came up again. He held himself down and committed suicide.
Was he the exception?
He's an exception. The only one that I ever knew.
Most people, would you say they were enjoying their Indian service?
Yes. The environment was good. There was no reason why anyone should...
What about boredom and the heat, though? Or were you bored?
No. We wouldn't let it, but we got used to it. Yes. We accepted it. We hadn't time to get bored because we had plenty of activity, you see, except when we just, on the afternoons, relaxation. You could go for a swim. You needn't be bored. Some old soldiers used to make their own rugs on a big frame. And used to make some table mats, you know, to take home, made of different coloured silk, jute. Just like silk, you know, when it's teased out. And it was remarkable the designs they could put in. They spent the time doing that. Nobody took any notice. It was hobby, you see. And when you were finished, you just put it behind your bed and stood it up. If the company commander come round or sergeant major come round, he knew what they were on, he never said a word. That was occupational therapy, you see.
Did you try one?
No, I didn't.
Were there any
I'm
other
no good at that. I'm no good at all.
Were there any other hobbies?
Not really. I used to go out and do a bit of sketching in my time, you know, different local places. Pencil sketching.
Were there any photography firms or, you know, people who did took photographs for money, you know, amongst the men?
We had one of bandsmen, he had a box camera. A little brownie box camera, you know. And he would take one or two snaps of the local lads. I had one or two, but he never charged much for them anyway. It was his hobby.
So it wasn't for money?
No. The money he got, he bought film. And they give you the picture free anyway. You know what I mean? Of different places where he went round. He took a little snap here and there. And we, of course, as one or two used to have a little bit of fun between us, the band and the bugles, particularly one chap called Alexander. He used to be an oboe player. And I'm always certain, because he's a friend of mine, and I don't know whether he did it for me, but why, if he did, he was crucified.
What did he do then?
Well, apart from being in the band and playing an oboe, he used to take it. He was also a librarian, you know, the music librarian. And it was next door, the next partition to us, and it was partitioned halfway up, and the remainder of the arch was open, you see.
Is this to your barrack room?
The barrack room, yes, and he was in another little room, not our barrack room, next to it. Library, you see.
Was it a music library or a book library?
Music library. But he used to go in there, perhaps if the band was going to play certain pieces, he used to get all the pieces out and ready, you know, for every particular instrument and things like that, and keep it up to date. But the swine used to take his oboe in, and used to do a little bit of oboe music as well. But it certainly didn't fit in with any military music, because he used to play it in the Egyptian style, you see. And he'd be on and on and on, and if anybody wanted a kip or reading, anything like that, this was used to be going on time and time. And he knew what he was doing it for, because he got right behind the partition. We used to throw all sorts over the top, a boot, a plate. It would have been the petition to missing all the time. They could hear them bounding off the thuds on the other side. He never took it away. It went worse. It got worse instead of, you know, moderated. He used to play it quick. And we used to get up and go around and peer through the door. Like, you know. Then when he saw us, he used to have a moustache, you know. Probably a moustache.
Curled up.
He used to take it out from his lips and give a big grin, you know. He used to say, "Now look here, tough, how about putting in a bit of shush? You've gone on long enough, haven't you? Or have we got to come in there and drag you out and break that bloody oboe over our knees? You're not going to touch it. The first one that comes me and he'll get this straight up his arse, and that's it." Now come on, play the white man. Tough, come on. Well, I'll see about it. Are you sure? Oh, go on, you're all right. And I think he used to pipe down a bit then. He finished then. He had his purgatory half hour.
Yeah. Are there any other, I mean, stories like that that give us an idea of what life was like between you, as, you know, sort of things that used to happen? Funny stories or anything?
Yes, there was. I remember one of the members of the Buglers managed to catch an Indian tree squirrel. We used to call them tree rats, and they are squirrels, really. He managed to trap one, and he kept it.
This was up at Le Bon, was it?
Yes. He kept it, and when one chap in the band vacated his place of rest, and he slipped the squirrel in his bedding. The chap went back, slid in, you know, half naked, and the squirrel was inside him. Well, you know, you can't catch them, they're squirming all over. He gave one terrible shriek, threw everything off, ruffled in the nets. The squirrel couldn't escape, it was fastened in the net, it was a mosquito net. And the bandsman didn't know what had happened. I don't know who the bugler was either, really, with a tree rat. And he'd done it very smartly, quick, in, out, on guard, and away. And we always remember that chap shouting and screaming when he got in. He said he thought it was a snake or something, there was a snake in.
Were there many snakes, nasty insects, that sort of animal life there?
No. There was a talk about cobras, you know, and people used to think they were just like as common as groundworms, really. Cobras used to avoid human beings.
Did you ever see that sort of snake?
Well, there were several snakes. I brought some home and put them in the school museum. They were really grass snakes. You could handle them, you know what I mean. They were quite harmless. Apart from that, there's plenty of wildlife, you know.
Such as?
Flying foxes.
Is this at Le Bon or more than Barrackpore, I would presume?
Barrackpore and Le Bon, up there. Fruit bats, flying foxes. We used to call them flying foxes because they're quite large. They're an animal with a long tail and used to spread the legs out. And the skin from the front to the rear used to be like a kite, used to be like square. And you glide from one tree to another. Because as soon as they grabbed, the skin used to fold in, making the tight flap around the body. Different insects.
What sorts?
Well, there was praying mantis, there was large beetles.
Were people scared of them? I mean,
no. They were harmless. The beetles used to come out at night time, really, you know. There was some about nearly an inch and a half long and about an inch across.
Is that in the barracks?
Yes. Moths by the galore used to come around with the light, you know. Large wings flapping around, attracted by the light.
What about things like spiders? Anything like that? Ants, bed bugs.
Bed bugs. Now you mentioned the subject there, I would have brought it up. It wasn't so bad at Le Bon for bugs, but down in the barracks, it was terrible.
In your biscuits?
Oh, yes. Especially on the plains, up where the cool air was, and that there, you weren't troubled by them. Wednesday afternoon, especially in the other places on the plains, we used to have what they call it a bugging out day. We used to take everything outside. We should the framework is all lattice work, you know. And we used to bounce it on the concrete to get you could see the bugs all running around as they fell from the frames. We had to squeeze them, kill them, you know, as they come out. We used to use paraffin oil, and we used to use a blow lamp. Pass it from one to the other, burning them out. and they kept them down. Where they came from, I do not know.
How long, so you'd done that, how long would it be before your bed was infested again?
About a week. As quick as that. And you had to look at your clothes hanging up as well. If the, and your topi, used to get in your topi.
Did they bite?
Oh, bite. Didn't half bite. It used to cause a lump. Vicious.
Right. And these were bed bugs, not lice?
Bed bugs. Were no lice, just bed bugs. That's all we wanted, thank you. Yes, you were enough. They kept us busy. And you could wake up through the night scratching your own mosquitoes as well. If you didn't sleep with the arms under the sheet or anything like the bear, they used to shove the proboscis through the netting into your elbows. And sometimes all the elbows was all like bumps where they'd been around drawing the blood out. And you never felt them, only when you were pestered by the bed bugs and you pull your arms in to give a scratch, you know, where they were, where they were biting. That was the only thing that really got on your wick, the bugs. They were worse than anything.
So couldn't you just have done your beds every week and then kept them down? Or
we did.
Every week?
Every Wednesday was a bugging out day.
Oh, that was every Wednesday?
Every
but
Wednesday.
Then by next Wednesday they'd be back?
They'd be back, yes.
Sorry, I didn't, yeah.
Yes.
No one had lice then?
No. Oh, no. No lice. No.
But at Le Bon you didn't have the bed bugs?
No.
Was that because it was a newer barracks, do you think?
They were newer barracks, you see. They hadn't been taken up there at all, the bed bugs.
Did you ever get the chance to go? I mean, the officers went hunting and things occasionally, but would you ever get the chance to go out in the country and look at some of the wilder wildlife?
I would have liked. I'd like the opportunity. I would like the opportunity, but we weren't allowed to really, you know. We only had limited boundaries. We couldn't, especially in Le Bon, you couldn't go over that bridge into Bhutan because you went into another area, you see, that was out of bounds.
So you never had any chance to see tigers and things like that?
No tigers. Many monkeys, things like that, more so on the plains than up in the hills. I think it was a bit too cool for them. And baboons as well, they were vicious. Oh, yes. When we used to march from Barrackpore into Calcutta, the baboons used to be barking and following us down the trees, barking at us, the band and playing from tree to tree. And we've got some burlies, you know, when they open their mouth, they've got really vicious fangs, and we strictly left them alone because they could attack a person.
Did they ever attack people?
No, they would if you interfered with them. Oh yes.